You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. It's the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. We want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine. We are here for you every weekday to get you through your day, get you started, get you home, whatever it is that you're doing. It's a Friday show, so happy Friday. You made it through your work week, and we're happy to be a part of your Friday, celebrating it with you. We're the Rain Jays. I am John Corrales, cover the Celtics for MassLive.com, joined today by Samuel Jamison Packard III.
Jam!
Also known as Ladies Love Cool Jam.
Jam!
And Young Baby Jamwich.
Jam! Oh, man, that wasn't different enough.
No,
the third jam is really throwing me up. I don't normally have three jams in me.
Really, honestly, I have to set you up better. I have to be the point guard here. I've got to make sure that you're getting the toss in enough time in the right place for you to execute the jam. The jam is your thing. You're the
I respect.
You see what I'm saying?
I respect you taking that responsibility, but I also have to remember that it's coming. And this time I completely forgot until you said the word Jamison. And then I was like, oh, crap. I got to come up with three different jams right now. And so
no,
that's on me, too. Everyone's got to take responsibility.
Sure, sure. And that's what we're going to be talking about here today. Personal responsibility. Thanks to, I hope I'm saying this name correctly, Amol Sharma, who tagged me in a tweet. He is the media and marketing bureau chief at the Wall Street Journal. And
this is a big deal.
And he sent out a series of tweets that started with my things to work on this offseason list for the Celtics. Went on to list a few of his things. Said he'd be interested in our list. Tagged me, Jay, Himmelsbach, Adam Kaufman. And so I say,
whoa. Threw in Himmelsbach and Adam Kaufman, but didn't tag Jam?
Didn't tag Jam, sorry.
It's a little tough, but I'll power through.
I was going to gloss right past that. But
I can't let that slip.
Yeah. I decided I'm not going to answer that other than to say this might just become tonight's podcast topic, because it did just become tonight's podcast topic. We're going to spend the entire show talking about what the Celtics need to work on this offseason. The rotation players, the starters, the bench, Brad Stevens, everybody. So let's just go through that. Reminder to all of you new listeners, if this is your first time, I want to welcome you aboard. Thank you for joining in. Subscribe to the podcast using the new Himalaya podcast app. Curates your podcast feed based on your interests, so it's a very cool app. And you can also tell your smart device at home or in your car to play podcast Locked On Celtics. So please do that and subscribe to get this to your device on a daily basis. So, Jam, let's start with the starters. Should we just assume in this practice here that Kyrie is coming back? Can we just say Kyrie is back for the purposes of this discussion?
And sure. For this exercise, why not? Kyrie's coming back.
Kyrie is coming back. So we'll just assume that the guys who could leave are coming back, except for Terry Rozier, because he's definitely gone.
I think we have to assume that Terry Rozier and Mook are not. They've played their last games as a member of the Celtics.
I think that's safe. Mook is iffy. I think if the Celtics do pull off a trade for Anthony Davis, they might re-sign Mook. But that's we can.
I just want Mook to get as much money as possible, and I don't think the Celtics can give it to him.
I agree. So let's just say, okay, so Mook and Terry, will assume that they're going to go. And it doesn't matter what we say about them anyway, because they're just going to be who they are. All right, let's start with Kyrie Irving. And I don't think there's anything that Kyrie Irving can do on the court, really, that's going to change. I think Kyrie's thing to work on this offseason would be, and this really applies to wherever he goes, is to understand and apply a little humility to his overall approach. He has spent the entire year talking about him being a basketball genius and how all of these things are going to happen because he's here and blah, 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 blah. And I think he just needs to understand that even if you consider yourself to be a superstar on the level of a LeBron, a Kevin Durant, which he is not, but if he wants to be that and if he can get himself there, there is an internal ego that you have, but externally you have to not convey how much you love yourself. Like, I think a little bit humility from Kyrie Irving's part will do a great justice to himself and would endear him a little bit more to his teammates.
No, I have to agree. I don't think that the issue for Kyrie is on the court, because if you look at his statistics and you just look at like what he did this year, he probably had one of the best years of his career. He was 40% from three. He averaged just a tick under 7 assists per game, 5 rebounds a game. He was damn efficient. He was really, really fucking good. Like, he was probably the best Kyrie Irving we've ever seen. And so I agree. I think it's all in his approach, and I don't know if it's necessarily humility, but I think it's tied into humility. And I think the first thing I think about, and it comes back to one of Brad's press conference after the Celtics lost to the Bucks, and he immediately just started praising the Bucks for building championship habits. And I don't think at any point in this year Kyrie was committed to putting the hard work in to kind of build those championship habits. And I'm saying that from definitely an outsider's perspective. I have no idea about like what was going on with the practices, but Kyrie was the first person to say, like, our mess ups in this season don't really matter. Just like, welcome to the playoffs, and kind of just saying that the regular season doesn't matter and it's not like a big deal. And that's just not the type of like habit building, and that's not putting in the hard work to like make sure you have something to rely on moving forward. So I think it's definitely an approach to him, like him buying into that, like all the stuff before the playoffs really matters. Because like if I think back to media day this year, every single player on the Celtics was on message and they were saying like, we need to put in the work. We haven't done anything yet. But I don't think they really believed it. And so, and I think a lot of that comes from the leader of the team. And I think Kyrie Irving, for better or worse, was the leader of this team just because he's the most talented player. And I just don't know if he believed fully that the Celtics needed to put in all of that work in order to kind of build up those habits. So I think it's an approach of like, he needs to set the tone of being the guy in there ready to win, and basically doing all of like the hard work, so they do have those habits that they can lean on when, I don't know, they go on a 4-game losing streak, or they, face some sort of adversity in the playoffs, or they just miss their next 8 shots, which they seem to do a bunch of times in the season. So I think it's all about that kind of that work and that habit building and enjoying the process of getting better. It felt like Kyrie was reliant on, or the assumption that this team had talent, this team was going to be great, but didn't really thrive in the process of like building a team to get better each day. He did not embrace his true Kaizen. I think that's the thing he has to improve on.
You know what? Here's the best way I can put it. He needs to understand that not everybody is him. And I think when you look at the great players, the really great players who tried to be coaches, how many of them failed? They don't do well often because they assume.
Why are you not great? Why are you not just great?
Why can't you just do this? Just do this. Like, well, not everybody can do what you do.
And so, I think it's, I'm sorry to interrupt, but then another thing is like, I think it's the, like, he doesn't realize how much of his approach translates down to the kind of the lesser players. And so he can coast by on being great, but he doesn't realize
that
him putting in the more work is like translates to other guys kind of like following his lead.
That's exactly what I'm saying. He needs to understand when I say not everybody is him, like he can go through a regular season and coast and turn it on in a postseason, even though it didn't quite work.
Allegedly, he can turn it on.
Like for four games at the end, he didn't. But okay, but let's just give him, let's just grant him this notion, okay? If I'm talking directly to Kyrie and can say, okay, you feel like you can coast through a regular season and turn it on in the postseason. Okay, that's fine. You can. And few people can, though. And that's when we talk about regular season habits. And so he, as the leader, needs to set this example that even though he can turn it on in the playoffs, he needs to put in the work. He needs to show these guys, the lesser players, or the guys who aren't good at, as good as him yet. Tatum might be a superstar someday. Who knows? That's his ceiling. He's not yet. He needs to learn that you don't become a superstar by coasting through regular seasons. You become a superstar by putting in the work, even though you're better than everybody else. That's what makes superstars superstars, because there are a lot of guys who can handle a ball. There are a lot of guys who can jump. There are a million, like literally a million guys who can jump as high as Michael Jordan did, who can run as fast as John Wall. There are a bunch of people who can do all of that stuff. The difference in what makes good players great is their obsessive work, okay? That Larry Bird, Magic Johnson rivalry, that Larry Bird was sitting there just constantly working on his game because he knew in the back of his head that Magic Johnson was on the other side of the country working harder than him. And Magic was on the West Coast thinking, well, Larry's working harder than me. And they let that mental thing push each other. Michael Jordan, in his Hall of Fame speech, when he was still calling out all the people, like at that point, like everybody knows you're the greatest, man. And he still carried that bitterness, that thing in your head that makes a good player great, a superstar, that obsessiveness. Like you can't teach these young players who are trying to be good that coasting or not putting in the hard work is okay. So that's my message to Kyrie. You even though you can do it, you can't do it because you're letting younger players get off the hook, and they don't have that ability that you have or you think you have to turn it on in the postseason.
And I'm going to just take this opportunity to blame LeBron James for this because
right,
Kyrie, that's the kind of the school of thought that Kyrie came up under, where LeBron James had an ability to do that, at least in the second Cleveland administration, because he's LeBron James. He's one of the best basketball players in the history of time, and he really could turn it on. We saw a couple of those Cavs playoffs runs where they really did turn it on and were able to make the finals. Granted, they were helped out because the East was relatively weak, but Kyrie Irving is not LeBron James. He's not someone who can have that big an impact on the game. And also, LeBron James had the benefit of having a talent like Kyrie Irving out there. But I agree with you wholeheartedly that it's about going beyond just your immediate talent. It's about being the leader and like kind of being the multiplier effect for everyone else on the team based on your work ethic and trying to kind of propel everyone else forward. So Kyrie needs to become a true, if he returns, and hopefully he does, he needs to become a true Kaizen warrior. And just read the growth mindset and he'll figure it out.
That'll do it. That's his assignment. Okay, let's move on. This should be quick. Al Horford. What does Al Horford need to do anything? Just keep being Al Horford.
Continue his fantastic skincare regimen.
Yep.
Continue being a great father and a great husband. I think maybe can you request that a guy work on durability? Like I think someone at Al's age, like 33 years old, it's not something like he can put in a whole bunch of extra work. I think Al Horford is, if anything, I think I think his criticism, the classic like Lou Maloney criticism, is like, oh, he paces himself in the regular season, and then the playoffs he play like he like is so much more aggressive. It's like, well, yeah, I'm for that strategy. He's if he needs to save it a little bit and do load management, and so he can save the playoffs. I'm for that. I'm sure there are like specific things that Al Horford needs to work on, but I'm not going to criticize that man.
I would say that Al Horford summer should be getting into like yoga and
all that
kind of stuff. Like he needs to go into the Joe Johnson school of longevity and hot yoga, all that stuff to like really get that flexibility and just make himself as healthy as possible. And then honestly, just shooting threes. Like he just needs to, if he needs to work on anything, it's getting that 3-point shooting percentage up a little bit more. Like his drop off from what was it, 40% a couple seasons ago to like 36. Those few percentage points make a big difference. So just keep on figuring out the 3-point shooting. That's all he needs to do. But mostly it's his body and getting into like I'm going to buy him one of those yoga class pass things like that. That's my gift to Al Horford.
Yeah. I'm just imagining Al Horford sweating a lot in hot yoga and it's a good image.
Yeah. I'm going to move on from that. Let's go to the Jays. Let's start with Jason Tatum. My first thing for Jason Tatum is to stay away from Kobe Bryant at all costs. Just do not go work out with Kobe at all. Stop. Don't do that. He needs to work on his ball handling and like just dribbling two balls everywhere he goes. So when he drives, because he should be driving excessively, he can get to the rim without losing the ball. He still loses the ball too easily. I want Jason Tatum to come back as a guy who attacks the rim and shoots threes. None of this mid-range crap. It's okay to have those shots where you step into a 15-footer. That's fine. You take a big guy off the dribble and you step in rhythm to a foul line jumper. That's money. That's easy money. That's a warm-up shot. Fine. The up fake stepping into a shot that's a foot into the three-point line, no, not at all. So that needs to keep driving. And he needs to keep attacking. He needs to be a free throw grifter. He needs to be shooting 8, 9, 10 times from the line. That's where Jason Tatum needs to be.
I agree 1,000%. I watch my buddy on Instagram. He trains prospects for the NBA draft. He was the G League coach for the Red Claws this year. But every single time I see one of his Instagram stories, he has like a pad where he just basically just beats the shit out of all of his people he's training while they're going to the rim. And I just feel like that's what Jason Tatum needs to do for the entire summer is just have someone beat him up the entire time. And I'm glad you mentioned grifting because he probably for every single time, I felt like he drew a lot of contact this year. His contact to actual fouls drawn ratio was horrendous. And I can't tell if it's just he's a young player. I can't tell if he's just like pissed off the refs or doesn't have the reputation yet. But he needs to change either his approach in terms of selling the contact or his approach in terms of working the referees. But something needs to change where it results in more foul shots for him. It could just him being more aggressive. It could him being kind of the hardened flail back where it really sells contact. But he has all the talent in the world. I think we saw him when he's at his best, he is getting to the rim. And so it's getting to the rim and drawing contact, drawing fouls, and just being more of a presence around the rim. And that involves being together at gathering just the ball when he goes up because he feels like he still loses that a bunch. But I think it's a lot about playing through contact and then just being able to either sell calls or draw those foul calls. Because you're right, he should be a guy who gets – I would say 8 to 10 free throws a game. He's just Tatum length is a thing we've talked about. He can really use that. He's giant body that really should be using to his advantage. And that's one of the Celtics' biggest deficiencies of last season. And so I think he's the best suited in terms of players on the Celtics right now to kind of really improve his free throw rate, just because Kyrie, I don't think he's ever going to be that guy. Al Horford's not really that type of player, but Tatum really, he can be that type of player. So whatever you can do in the offseason to improve your free throw rate, I think Jason Tatum needs to be doing it.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's take a break. We've got a few more players to go through here, so we'll take a break. We'll come back. We've also got Brad Stevens to talk about. We'll do that in the third segment. So stick around. Much more coming up on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're back with more of the offseason to-do list. We've done Kyrie, Al Horford. We've done Jason Tatum. Now let's... Geez, we only did three guys in all that time? Wow. Let's go to Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown is next, and say, I think Jaylen Brown, a lot of the same stuff with him applies to, a lot of the same stuff with Jason Tatum applies to Jaylen Brown, where preeminently his ball handling is still a thing that he needs to work on. I thought he did a great job throughout the course of the season, adjusting, adding a fadeaway in the post, picking his spots, shooting, driving. If anything, he just needs to work on properly attacking the closeouts. And I think just honing that 3-point shot, getting his ball handling, tightening up his ball handling, and continuing to just work on varying his speeds on his drives, but attacking the closeouts and just knowing how to attack the closeouts. And that could be something as maybe he needs to add a spin move in the lane. He doesn't do a lot of spin moves, but that's something that could work. He's worked on the Euro step a little bit. I like that. I like how his season progressed. I really think this past season, Jaylen Brown grew the most, like from day one to day game 94, whatever it was, 95. Jaylen Brown really had a very, very nice progression from beginning to end. I want him to continue that. Driving in the half court, I think, is something that he needs to get better at. And if he can really do that better, then the free throws there will start to come naturally. And, of course, the free throw shooting needs to get better.
Oh, yeah. The free throw shooting definitely needs to improve. His shooting splits in the postseason were absolutely ridiculous, where he's shooting like 50% from three and 50% from the line.
That's weird. But it's so weird. It doesn't make sense.
It really doesn't make any sense. But your point about how much he progressed this season, caveat, it's helped that he started out so poorly because there was only so much room to go up. But he was like the idea of Kaizen and incremental progress, because it felt like he was getting better throughout the entire year. His 3-point percentage went up, and it felt like there's just many different facets to his game that just like he kept on adding to and tinkering with and just got better. You mentioned his kind of fadeaway in the lane. I thought his passing and his playmaking just improved drastically. In terms of driving with his head up and his ability to make a pass once he'd actually did drive. And so I think it's just more of the same. It's more of just being able to attack and not just being a head down kind of homicidal Jaylen, which, although I appreciate homicidal Jaylen a lot, it's kind of being able to drive with your head up and make the right play and make the right pass in that situation. And it's something I definitely think he got better at as the season got on, but I think when he kind of unlocks his ability as a playmaker, I think he becomes that much more dangerous on the offensive end. And then on the defensive end, it's classically the falling for the pump fake and
yes,
just doing a better job of that, of just closeouts in general. But he really I think he actually, it's another thing he improved upon. He wasn't as bad, but, and part of this is just like playing against Chris Middleton, a known demon, where it's hard to kind of fight off his dark magic, but Jaylen Brown really struggled with the pump fake, and it's something he struggled with his entire career, just because he's kind of a naturally aggressive and bouncy defensive player. But I think that would be the main focus for me for Jaylen on the defensive end.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a very solid point. I mean, just seeing him bite on those pump fakes, and that gets him into foul trouble. And that's when you're as good as he is, you want to. That's something you can easily clean up. And the thing with those guys that are, it's funny that supreme athletes, like these super athletes, they bite on these fakes when really you can stay down and take an extra beat before jumping. And they tend to jump right away, like Robert Williams, and we'll get to him. But what was your joke the entire year? He loves to jump.
That guy loves jumping.
He loves jumping. He never... The guy, he can wait until the guy actually leaves his feet and still jump as high as he can because he's so quick. Like, he doesn't even have to bite on the fake. Like, if on some of these fakes, if some of those were actual jump shots, the way he jumps and the way Jaylen Brown jumps, like, okay, fine. You block the shot with your face. Like, that's, you don't have to do that. You can wait to see if it's an actual jump, and then you can jump and you can still get a finger on that shot and still be a threat to block that shot. So and the reason why they're even pump faking you is because you're a threat. So I agree, it's something that you need to get in your head and have that confidence in. It's the same concept defensively as like telling Kelly Olynyk to shoot the ball even when a guy's closing out because you can still get that shot off. You don't have to pump fake every time. Like, it's the same thing. You can wait. You don't know how much time you actually have on the floor. So that's Jaylen Brown. Okay, let's move on to Gordon Hayward. So Gordon Hayward, step one is...
Remember that you're Gordon Hayward.
Yes. That's really the biggest thing that he needs to do. He needs to take this summer and exercise all of the demons. This entire summer should be one big ego boost to Gordon Hayward. Whatever Drew Hanlon or whomever they're working out with, like, they need to get Gordon Hayward back to the I'm a Western Conference All-Star Gordon Hayward, not this tentative guy, not this guy that gets swallowed up by double teams, which part of it is the recovery from the injury. Like, he was just not physically in a place. He was not confident enough in himself and his body to do the things that he needed to do on the floor. Even though his body probably could have done it, he now just needs to go through a summer of his body doing it. And if he can do that, then things will go very well for him next year. But this summer is 1,000,000% about getting Gordon Hayward's confidence back.
He definitely needs the confidence, but I don't know if they just, like, he's a gamer. He's probably used to a bunch of shit talk and, like, people just, like, being mean to him online. And I don't know if, like, they just need to piss him off. But I want, like, the Gordon Hayward Revenge Anger Tour starting in October,
yes,
2019. He needs to come out with, like, the fury of a thousand suns and just pissed off and trying to prove people wrong. Like, that's, like, the – like, I need to see, like, the most intense Gordon Hayward starting on day one. And, that, like, I think it might be difficult playing with Kyrie. It might be difficult playing with, like, all the different guys and him, especially with, like, recent Terry Rozier comments and things we've observed of – him kind of getting minutes to start the year that he didn't really – his play didn't – he didn't deserve those minutes. So maybe he was in an awkward kind of situation there. But he needs to come out and just be trying to prove to everyone that I'm fucking Gordon Hayward. I deserve this money. I am an all-star.
Right.
And you guys are all, like, wrong. And so it goes hand in hand with the confidence. You need the confidence to be able to come out like that. But we talk about Angry Al. I want Angry Gordon. I think he needs, like, a sleeve of tattoos, maybe a neck tattoo.
Yes.
I don't want Daddy always, yes, happy. Like, I think he just needs to be furious. I want furious Gordon Hayward for sustained months.
That would be amazing. You remember the first 20-whatever point game he had was against Minnesota? And Marcus Smart and Marcus Morris were like, yeah, we really fucked with him the entire practice. Like, they were fouling him and all that stuff, and it really pissed them off, and he came out and had that game. Like,
that's... Marcus Smart needs to move in with Gordon Hayward and just foul him every single moment of the day. He's making breakfast, he needs to be taking charges. Like, he needs to just piss him off.
Just slap the bacon out of his hand in the morning and just step up to him like, what you gonna do? What? And just piss the entire time. Just give him an edge. Just torture him. Just really like war crime torture.
Waterboard him.
Yeah.
Emotionally waterboard him.
Just whatever you need to do. So he comes into the season just a different person. he needs that edge. He definitely needs that edge. He has it. Guys have talked about it in practice. He has that edge. He loses it too easily. And that's probably just his personality, but he really just needs to find a place. He needs to find that, like you said, I'm Gordon fucking Hayward place. And just whatever he's doing on the floor, like, just, it doesn't matter who is in front of him. But like, I'm G, and I'm going to go out there. I'm just going to dunk on you. Like, we saw flashes of it. We saw flashes of it even in the Indiana series when he tried to get back the poster that Miles Turner put on him. Like, that's the edge. That right there is the edge that we need out of Gordon Hayward for sure. So whatever they need to do, slap him around, whatever. I'm 100% for that. Who's next on our list? Let's see.
Marcus Smart, and he doesn't need to change anything because he's a beautiful boy, and I love him.
I'm in agreement.
Just, tell me I'm wrong. He shot 36% from three this year. He played crazy intense defense. I think maybe he can improve playmaking on offense. In years past, I thought he was better at kind of playmaking in the pick and roll. And so maybe it was like had more to do with his role this season. But I just think Marcus needs to keep being Marcus.
We love Marcus. And I hope, man, this summer is going to be weird. And I hope it doesn't cost the Celtics Marcus Smart. I understand if it does. But, man, that would really suck. But having him just keep shooting, man. Keep working on that shot. Keep improving that shot. Keep going out there and just working on it in different situations. Improve that shooting just a little bit more. Anything you can do to just keep on doing that is, I'm all for that. So not really much to talk about with Marcus Smart. I mean, he's just keep being Marcus Smart. We love it. Who else do we have left? We want to get into.
We can go real quick about Semi Ojeleye. I thought Semi was a pretty improved. He was a better 3-point shooter this year than I thought he would ever be. I think he just needs to keep shooting, keep being aggressive on offense.
He needs to understand like that you're a 3-and-D guy, and just he's got to spend the entire summer shooting and becoming a dead eye shooter. Like, he's got to shoot 40% from three. What did he shoot this past season from three?
He was 31%, which feels lower than I actually thought, because I thought he was actually – it's actually lower than his rookie season.
If he's going to exist in the NBA, he needs to be a guy like James Posey was for the Celtics in the Big Three era. He just needs to be a guy that can defend his ass off, which he can, but when he catches the ball, like you – he needs to be the guy that – a defender says, "Ah, shit," when he catches the ball wide open, and he's not there yet. He did do that a little bit, and he even did that in the Milwaukee series a little bit. But he just needs to get himself to a place where he's a dead-eye shooter. He hits the shots in practice. So I've seen him. He just needs to have that translate to the games.
He had a crazy second year because he went from playing 15 minutes a game in his rookie year to now he only played 10 minutes a game. And I'm shocked to just look at his 3-point attempts in total. He just took fewer shots just on the year. So I thought he actually had a pretty decent approach, and he felt like he took corner threes with a lot of confidence this year. So I was surprised to see his percentage be so low, but I agree. He just needs to be, if he can get up to 35 and be the kind of same defensive player, he should be a very solid, like, eighth or ninth guy on the bench.
Who's left? Daniel Tice? Daniel Tice might be around, but...
Who knows? I don't know. Daniel Tice needs to become more athletic. Like, just be a different guy than Daniel Tice. I feel like Daniel Tice is really... He's, like, maximized his ability as like Daniel Tice.
Yeah, he, again, like, all of these guys, him, Yabu, like, they need to... Oh, we didn't do Aaron Baines.
I don't... Wait, what? Can Aaron Baines shoot more threes? I don't know. Aaron Baines get dunked on less? I think, it feels hard to...
Honestly, like, I think Aaron Baines falls in the same mold. Him, Yabu, Tice, Shemi, shoot better from three. Like, that's all you can do. Like, Aaron Baines is good in the post. He's good defensively. Like, he's exactly what you need him to be. If he's going to shoot threes, he shot 34%. So if you're going to shoot the threes, then you got to knock him down. If anything, I would hope that he's a little more judicious with his 3-point shooting.
No. Shoot more.
Okay, fair enough.
He was 1.2 threes a game, up from 0.3. I love it.
That's he shot 61 3-pointers this past season. Over the course of the rest of his career, he shot, 21, 27, 28. So more than twice as many threes than his entire 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years in the league. In this past season.
It's really insane that he made threes years ago in that Philadelphia series, because in that entire season he only made three, and then he just started making them against the Sixers, which is laugh out loud funny.
Yeah, he made 11 in that series. That's just insane. He didn't make 11. He made four
his entire career.
His entire career prior to that, and he made 11 in that series. He made 21. This entire season. So he still only doubled, not even, that playoff total from last season in the entire regular season. So whatever it was, he needs to keep shooting. Just be better at it. If you're going to shoot, that's the only thing I would ask. If you're going to shoot, then just be above league average or don't shoot them. That's it.
Agree. There's only one more player I can think of that we can talk about, and that is Senor Time Lord himself.
Yes.
Well, and he needs to do something on offense other than catch lobs.
Yeah.
I don't think he can extend out to three at this point, although he should probably be working on it.
He's working on it. I've seen him taking the threes in practice. Like
even just like a willingness to take an elbow jumper, I know it's not like the most efficient shot, and I'm sure that's not like what the Celtics offense wants, but anytime he had the ball this year, anyone defending him was at least 8 to 9 feet off of him. Sure. And it's just like you need to change that a little bit and be a little bit more dangerous on the offensive end just to keep defenders honest. It will open up the lobs. It'll just open up spacing that much more. And then on top of that, even if it's not a shooting, he needs to go to the Al Horford, Marcin Gortat school of setting picks. I just think if he's going to be this dominant high flying role man, like it all starts with the pick and roll. And so if he can get better at setting those picks and then rolling to the rim, he's ready to come in and make a defensive impact. He's just a nothing offensively. And I don't think he's going to be a great offensive player, but he needs to be, if you're going to become like a solid NBA role player, a type of guy you can come in and like make an impact defensively. You can't be a negative on the offensive end. You need to at least be neutral. And so I don't know if it's just hitting that mid-range shot, if it's extending out to three, or if it's just like becoming a great guy, a kind of role man setting picks, but he needs to just improve on the offensive end.
Yeah. And he has been working on it. Like you've seen it. He started taking a few jumpers. I remember that Wizards game to end the season. I think he only hit one basket off the top of my head, and it was like a 15-footer. It was kind of nuts. he's working on facing up. He's working on his shot. And that's something that he definitely needs to do. And it's a new wrinkle to his game, but it's going to take time when you're adding things. Like right now, his bread and butter is defending, setting a good picks. Like the pick, like you said, the Horford-Gortat school, that's more important than the jumper, because you can set the pick and maybe they'll just play you to pop, but you can still be Clint Capella-esque, and that was the comp coming in this season. You can still be the guy that rolls and catches the lobs. That's still effective enough. The other stuff will come, and like I said, he's working on it. So I'm confident that he will. I don't know how good he'll get at it, but I'm confident that he's putting in the work and that it will get better, and we'll see how much better it gets. Okay, let's take a break. We're going to come back and talk about coaching. Brad Stevens has a lot to work on, too. And before we do that, I just want to send a shout-out to the Boston Bruins, who are going to the Stanley Cup Finals. Watching this game as we're podcasting, it's 4-0, this game is over. So the Red Sox have won. The Patriots have won. The Bruins are going to the finals. If the Celtics remain as the only team that didn't win a championship in Boston, how embarrassing is that? They're the team that came in with the highest expectations.
I think the Patriots always have the highest expectations, sure. To be fair.
Sure. Okay. But the Celtics were right there. No one expected the Red Sox. No one expected the Bruins.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a hockey guy whatsoever. I've got a lot of hot hockey takes that I'm not going to subject the listeners to right now.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're coming right back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. One more off-season look. And it's Brad Stevens and the coaching staff in general, but Brad Stevens for sure. And we'll bring up Gary Washburn's piece in the Boston Globe that suggested that Brad Stevens swooped in too late. And that's pretty much a direct quote from Washburn. He was told that by the time Brad Stevens came in and tried to fix the problems with Kyrie Irving in the locker room, it was a little too late, and the self-policing that Brad Stevens allows his locker rooms to do didn't work out this season. This goes back to what we were saying about Brad Stevens doesn't know how to coach Kyrie Irving. When Kyrie Irving said, "Brad has never coached a guy like me," like it's a very true statement. And the question now is whether that has cost the Celtics Kyrie Irving or not. There are people, I've been told from people in the league that the Celtics or that Kyrie doesn't think that Brad Stevens knows how to coach him, and that's why he's looking to leave. I don't know how true that is because it's far removed from the team, but Brad Stevens definitely needs work on this aspect of his game. Brad Stevens' strength is getting people who are not seen as good enough to overachieve. His Kaizen, that whole thing, the growth mindset, it's about getting a bunch of guys who have been written off, the Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder types of the world, and to get them to rally together and follow him under a common cause and outperform their expectations. And now he had a season where everybody was supposed to be great and everybody was believing how great they are. And no one gave a shit about following, yay, let's rally behind Brad, because they're like, yeah, we got this. We don't need your growth mindset. We've grown already. And he, Brad Stevens, in my opinion, needs to find that next thing. Like, you're great at rallying the troops when they don't think they can do it. Now, how do you manage these egos? the Phil Jackson type thing where you've got a bunch of guys who think they're fucking awesome. How do you get those guys to actually work together as part of a team? So that is his biggest challenge this summer.
I have to agree. And I think it goes back to the habit building. And it's like a lot of what you said is it's easy to convince guys like Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder that they need to put in the work, because those guys like Jay Crowder came from two junior colleges and has been like putting in the crazy amount of work and knows that's what he takes. And it's harder to convince the established stars or guys who think they're established stars to put in that, that amount of effort, early on in the season and build up those habits. And like, I go back to media day where they're all saying the right things and they're all talking about the amount of work that they need to put into the season. And so it's, I think coaching is one of the more difficult things to try to evaluate, because it's like, how do you evaluate Brad Stevens' ability to get Kyrie Irving to do something? Like, a lot of that is on, like, I guess that is the job of the coach, but a lot of that is on Kyrie Irving's decision making and whether or not he like wants to put into that effort. Eventually, it's like, how much can you really control another person? But I do think there needs to be something, and I don't know if it's him like stepping in more and being more of an authoritarian. I think players like the idea that Kyrie doesn't think Brad knows how to coach him, like, it's kind of like comical to me, because like in the alternative is that Brad was going to be more of a kind of a dickhead and kind of try to challenge Kyrie more, which I don't think Kyrie would necessarily appreciate. I don't know. Maybe he would. Maybe that's what like the kind of coaching he wants. But it's like the better way to deal with Kyrie Irving is to kind of like demand more from him. And maybe that's the solution. So I think it's hard to try and figure out what exactly Brad needs to do in terms of managing personalities, because it's really tough to evaluate kind of the individual impact a coach like that has. On the strict X's and O's, I think the offense needs I like the idea of the read and react offense and a bunch of guys in the Brad special and a bunch of guys having 12 to 15 points. But like the offense just was so many times this year stagnant, and it didn't work out when guys were not getting shots. And you know what? Let's not save Kyrie and Al pick and rolls for just the postseason. I think there's ways where it might not be the most egalitarian offense, and it might not be one where it gets everyone like the most involved, and it's not the perfect kind of beautiful game. But at some point, just running spread pick and roll is shown to work in this here NBA we talk about. And then when you have players like Kyrie and Al Horford, I just think you need to go to that more often, because the offense this year just was not at points. I think that was their biggest struggle. Just like, okay, there's a second quarter where we haven't scored points for 8 minutes. Like, if you run more just like spread pick and roll designed to just have your best players be great, I think you just get better results that way. So I think their offense needs to be a little bit retooled to be. And maybe that's what playing with stars is, that you put more kind of eggs in the stars basket and let them be great, instead of trying to have this egalitarian offense. That's the way you placate some of the stars. But I just think there needs to be some sort of adjustment on that front if Kyrie returns, to just trying to get more out of Kyrie Irving, because he has the potential to be this great pick and roll player, and I just don't think we saw enough of that this year from the Celtics offense.
Yeah, I think when you have this level of talent, the Celtics, like, it makes sense in a vacuum. It makes sense to say, move the ball, everybody gets their shots, everything works, and when everybody does the right thing, everybody will benefit. Except the problem is these young guys, they don't care about that shit. They just want to keep shooting and get their own stats and pad their own stats because it looks good and it helps them in their future contracts. Like, that's just something that you have to understand. Like, I think for Brad Stevens, I don't know what he's like behind closed doors. Like, we're not allowed in there for the entirety of practices. We're allowed in there after practice is over. So I don't know how much he gets on guys. I don't know what he's like in the locker room in film sessions. And these, but the perception is that the guy that we see in the interviews and the guy that we see in general, like that, it makes sense that he's at least some level of that guy in practice. What he needs to be is a little bit more, like he needs a little bit more pop, Greg Popovich. Like he needs a little bit more, just get.
He's been kind of a dickhead.
Right. Like he just needs to assert a little bit more, and whatever a guy's role is, like he just needs to make sure these guys, your role is your role. This is what you need to do. You're on this team, and you're going to do this. So what, and he needs to get on Kyrie a little bit. Like he needs to challenge Kyrie to some degree. Like you can do, it's not about what you can do. It's what we need you to do. And there's some middle ground between the two, but he needs to let Kyrie be Kyrie to a point. But he also needs to let Kyrie know, like, you know, you can go do your thing and that's fine for you, but it's not going to help our team and we're all going to fail. And that's going to be a problem for all of us. So this is what you need to do. And so go do it. And there needs to be a way for that on a professional level like that. For me, I'm boiling it down to a very, you know, I don't know, whatever the word is, point, but he needs to find a way to connect with Kyrie and get him to play the way a star needs to play within the offense. And that offense, like you said, definitely needs to be more tailored to the strengths of his best players. That college style read and react, like that stuff's just not going to work. I think we spent a whole year seeing that all they're reading is where can I find a place to get the mismatch? And the reaction is everybody get out of the way so I can take my mismatch. Like that's not exactly what this offense needs to be. So he needs to find a way to get them out of that habit. So very long-winded way of saying that Brad needs to find that next level of coaching where the rah-rah stuff that he's been doing, the hit singles stuff, like that, it's just not going to fly anymore. Like it's a great concept. And yes, the team needs to quote unquote hit singles, but he needs to get to the level of finding that connection with his star player, running an offense, like you said, the spread pick and roll, and making sure the other guys can understand that within that you can still get your numbers, but let's not just do the same thing that we've been doing the past couple of years, because it's not going to work when you have a star laden team.
Yeah, and all of that is a lot easier said than done, because I was just thinking, like, you need to connect better with Kyrie Irving, one of the most confusing players who just says a lot of nonsense a lot of the time. And so it's like, yeah, connect better and just figure out how that guy works, because that's an easy thing to do.
All right. We didn't even mention that he's interviewing J.B. Bickerstaff, who is a guy that regardless of his reputation of as a head coach, is a guy that earns the respect of players in the locker room. I mean, it could be as simple as he can still be the same guy, but
he needs some sort of presence in that locker room
adding to his staff. Like he could be the good cop if he adds a bad cop. Like that's something that could work. Like it's not all on Brad Stevens. Like he needs to assemble the staff, and part of what Gary Washburn's article was about, going back to that, is that he filled his staff out with these like Butler disciples and these college guys. He did hold over like Jay Larinaga, but adding another NBA guy with a good NBA reputation, that's not the worst idea in the world. And having a guy that as the bad guy on the bench to go in there and kind of be the like I said, the bad cop. Like that would be beneficial, I think, to the Stephen staff.
No, I completely agree. I think there needs to be someone who kind of, if Brad is not going to be the disciplinarian or the kind of angry guy, someone with NBA pedigree, someone who might have either played in the league or coached in the league, to kind of be able to, who has the players' respects and is able to, I guess, be more of the disciplinarian. I think that'd be very beneficial to the Celtics, because clearly whatever the recipe they had this year did not work. And so, while I think they'll miss Micah Shrewsbury, who's going to Purdue, because he was the defensive coordinator and they had a great defense, I think there needs to be some sort of change up in kind of just the dynamic of coach player interaction. So I'd like the addition of Bickerstaff, but there could be countless others who kind of can fill that role.
All right. So that's it. That's the podcast. That's our to-do list for the summer for this Boston Celtics squad.
And if they do that, they can win 70 games.
That's the prediction. We'll go through the schedule game by game and predict them all for sure.
Absolutely.
And then, yeah, never mind. I'm not going to go there. That's it. Thanks for listening. Your to-do list is to subscribe to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Go ahead and download that Himalaya podcast app. Get those podcast feeds curated to your interests. So it's a great app. Go ahead and download that. You can also tell your smart speaker at home or in your car to play podcast Locked On Celtics. All of you regular subscribers, go ahead and give us that 5-star rating, that good review, please, because it helps us out in the standings, in the ratings, in the whatever. More people get to see us. You know what I'm saying. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.